And we are back with episode 359 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and God, I hate it when I oversleep and miss my flight to Argentina.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I wish everybody would just let me get off my case just because I went out of town for a little while.
I just want to find the bar where Lexi works. I'd go there the time. Anyhow, we are going to be talking about some Haven and the series premiere of Sleepy Hollow, and then maybe check in on Dexter towards the end if we have time. But first, Edmund, if you could please.
We will be discussing absolutely everything that happened in these episodes, so you will be horribly spoiled. But it's been a week or so we hope you've had time to catch up.
Mm-hmm. And we are going to go ahead and just jump right on into it with this discussion of Haven. And here's the promo.
Friday on an all-new Haven.
She's completely incinerated.
Like some kind of spontaneous combustion?
Some secrets.
You gotta find him before he burns the whole town.
Are more explosive than others.
I need you to remember who you were.
Get out of my bar.
Haven, an original series, all-new this Friday at 10. Only on Sci-Fi. Imagine greater.
All right, and that would be Haven Season 4, Episode 2, Survivors. Duke needs Nathan to focus less of his attention on finding Audrey and deal with the more pressing problem of a person who appears to be immolating the residents of Haven in broad daylight. Yeah, I can kind of see how that would be the case. Okay, so I guess following up on all of the little plot threads that were introduced in the season premiere, we have this episode. And Gary, why don't you get us started on this one? What exactly did you think of this?
I wish I could say I was more thrilled about it. I thought the original episode, the first pilot for this, season opener was really good. They did have a lot to set up given how last season ended, and I thought they did a good job of doing it. But I didn't need more of this whole Nathan angst versus the town situation that seemed to be popping up for me. I thought he had left the town because the watch was after him, not so much that he was afraid of the help out the town. So, and I thought people pretty much understood that. So a lot of the hassle they were giving him didn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. Furthermore, I'm not surprised that he's, obsessing over Audrey or Lexi or whoever. I guess we'll still go with Audrey from his point of view. That I could certainly understand it after Duke comes back that he's obsessed about it. And so it seemed they were building to something that I didn't see why they were doing it in the first place.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, it's... I don't know. To me, it did seem like it was trying to get back to something that was a little more familiar ground for this show. And with so many things to deal with, I found that the main plot of the episode was just so rote versus all of the little details about the changed circumstances and everything else going on in the world that I found a lot more interesting that were happening in the background. So... we've talked about this before, where sometimes shows like this can get into this kind of pattern where it's not the main part of the show that you actually wind up watching an episode for. It's all the little continuing bits. And, I was a lot more intrigued by what was going on with Lexi and that situation and the mystery around this guy that she's talking to, whose name escapes me, but, it's because I think of him as... Jack, that's not his name.
William, stuff, I think it is.
Yeah,
William.
There's the little things going on with Duke and his brother, and that, how that's complicating things with the guard, and they're letting Vince and Dave kind of continue their, conflict over the direction that things should take, and Vince's control over the guard is kind of being challenged by Jordan, and all these things that are these ongoing storylines are the things that I'm more interested in than the guy who was
the trouble of the week.
Yeah, exactly. That did nothing for me.
That's one of the reasons I glossed over it. It was like, okay, we need this formulaic setup, and I really didn't didn't care. I wanted things to, you know, keep moving forward, not to just sort of dwell, which is one of my criticisms of this episode. I didn't feel we got that far. Mm-hmm. We didn't get that much story development. Yes, we got a revisit of things that have been going on, and we guess we got a better temperature of things, but I didn't feel like we really moved ahead with the plot.
Mm-hmm. It seemed more like it was just kind of trying to push it back into the usual thing and let people get more comfortable with the fact that things had changed by giving them something, I don't know.
Well, I know what you're saying, but I like that it changed. I was ready for it to change. Let's keep going.
Yeah,
Going. I don't want to go back. You know, the barn's blown up, folded, exploded. Everybody fell in, fell out. You know, we got a new Audrey or Alexi now. Yeah, okay, keep going. I don't need another. You know, I don't need another episode of Lexi trying to be convinced while she's in the bar. Okay, yeah, you did that already. Let's go. I mean, I want more.
Yeah, exactly. It needs to continue to move forward, and hopefully, you know, soon it will. But for me, it was a little bit. I just find that I don't have a whole lot to say about it. Actually, there's not a whole lot of detail to get into. It's almost like this was transitional in a certain sense. So for me, this was pretty much a 7. I mean, it had some good stuff on the periphery and the ongoing subplots, but the main plot just didn't go above average for me.
Well, I agree with you. I'm going to keep it a little on the short side too, except I'm going to go with a 6. I was really disappointed after, as I said, after the good setup of the first episode of the season, I thought we were going to keep going, not fall backwards. And we did. So that was that was disappointing to me.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a considerable drop in terms of our opinions from the premiere. So hopefully this is just an early season skid and they can get back on track next time around. Okay, so we can go ahead then and move on to, it's not so much of a quick hit because I'm sure we're going to talk a lot about it, but we're not going to run a promo or anything. This is for Sleepy Hollow, the series premiere. Appropriately named pilot. Boy, once again, very, very creative. Here's the recap here. In the series premiere of this update of Washington Irving's classic tale, that's one way of putting it, Ichabod Crane wakes up in the 21st century but finds his 18th century nemesis, the Headless Horseman, has also come along for the ride. After a local sheriff is killed, Crane teams up with Detective Abby Mills to sort out the mystery and its historical implications, though her supervisor is skeptical of all the supernatural shenanigans. I
or
guess,
is he?
Yeah, that's one way to put it, but not...
Where have I seen this before?
yeah. Well, I'll just put it this way. At the very beginning, I was kind of looking in the background to see when the dude in the Assassin's Creed outfit was going to run by, because this might as well have been a scene right out of Assassin's Creed 3. yeah, I think I know where some of these shows are getting their inspiration. But at any rate... kudos for them to focus less on the fairy tale aspect of this and more on the historical time period in which it was supposed to take place. Quite frankly, if you ask most people what when and where Sleepy Hollow was set, I'm sure many of them would not even remember it was the Revolutionary War. even though it's kind of obvious when you think about it. But anyway, yeah, let's... dig into this a little bit. Gary, you said that this sounded a bit familiar. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's this whole person out of time or out of their environment teams up with a police officer or some authority figure to try and, you know, try and discover the mystery or the secret. And it's kind of a tried and true plot. And honestly, the biggest thing was the detective character. Is it Ellis Willis? What's her... What's the character's name?
Abby Mills.
Mills. I got no sense of who she was. I the character development for a pilot, which is usually supposed to be, well, maybe not chock full of exposition, but it's supposed to give us a really good sort of feel for the characters. I never really got a good sense of her as a character. If anything, I should have had a really good sense at the end of a pilot of who she is, her motivations and stuff like that, and I didn't feel like I got that. We got, you know, a little sort of glance over, but nothing really well. I do admit I like that they didn't quite play him as a fool, which sometimes will happen in some of these out of time things. They didn't show him holding up a telephone by the wrong end or things of that nature, which was a relief. But at the same time, it seemed trite. And okay, nobody wants to believe this crazy man except for this one police officer. And I was hoping for something, and I might be mocking myself when I say this. I was hoping for something more original with this Sleepy Hollow do-over.
Edmund, how about you? What are your first thoughts on this one?
One of the things I liked was that was actually that Ichabod, you know, was not played as just this, you know, sort of, you know, as Gary said, this fool or this buffoon out of time. You know, they actually did have him as, you know, as a guy who, you know, yeah, was obviously freaked out by waking up in this strange new land, but was kind of rolling with the punches, you know, with I'm sure, you know, 17th, you know, or 18th century linguists would dispute this, you know, but with, you know, with the reasonably accurate, you know, speech patterns and things. But there was a heck of a lot they were cramming into this episode. in terms of sort of, you know, influences and, you know, where is he, you know, he's waking up with the jars and the snakes and the frogs and, you know, his wife turning out to be a witch and, you know, although a nice witch apparently. It's the sort of thing where, you know, they were sort of throwing a lot at us, and if they can keep it up, I think this could be very entertaining. I mean, I came through it, you know, sort of being more intrigued than groaning, which is a good thing, I think. Although the thing with the detective, I mean, it is odd that we have this, you know, and people have already started commenting on this odd trope that if you're a former lost character playing a sheriff, you're going to get killed off and have your job taken by this, by this younger co-star. I did like the little, for those of us who are aware of sort of, you know, opening credit conventions and even rules as far as the unions go, you know, certainly having Clancy Brown up there as an and Clancy Brown and, you know, before the guest stars, you know, was what, you know, it was a nice little head fake, although I presume it's because he's going to still be doing those voiceovers as she's going through all of his files. So yes, technically he is still around as a performer. there was part of me that was a little bit disappointed that it wasn't going to be Clancy Brown following him around the rest of the time.
Mm-hmm. I noticed how you got that Lost reference, it, by the way, but go ahead.
Yeah. Couldn't resist.
Yeah.
Well, at least you, I'll do what you weren't going to do and overtly mention or reference Under the Dome as the other show that was prominently this year.
No.
Following that trope. Anyway, I mean, one of the big things here is that they completely reframed the Headless Horseman instead of the way that it was back in the folk tale or whatever else, is that, and this is very early in the show, which was a little surprising. I thought it would be something that they would just drop at the very end as kind of a tease of some greater meaning, but it's all throughout this episode, is that the Headless Horseman is, I don't even know how this is supposed to work, is actually the incarnation of death, the first of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Despite the fact that he was clearly an actual soldier.
Yes.
Was it a Hessian, if I remember?
Yes, a Hessian.
There's
a little bit of talk here and there about there being, you know, bloodlines that are tied to the apocalyptic prophecies and so forth, and that could explain why that works the way that it does, but I don't know. It's all rather confusing. But the fact that this story is more about that than it is about any adherence to the actual legend. It seems like the legend is just a kind of jumping off point for this tale about the apocalypse.
And they don't know the legend either, which is another slightly annoying.
Well, I don't mind necessarily them taking Revelations as somewhat of an inspiration. I do kind of take some interest in how this very arcane text is often reinterpreted for narrative purposes. I kind of like it when that happens because it is so just... The imagery is fun to kind of dig into and think about what could it be turned into from a storytelling perspective. So I kind of liked where they went with it, that, you know, that these are, again, you know, you've got these bloodlines that go back, and these are the people that incarnate these roles within this apocalyptic story. And okay, that's all very intriguing, but I'm kind of hoping that they get into it a lot more in the next few episodes to kind of flesh this concept out. Because this smacks so much of, as I alluded to a couple episodes ago of our show, that Kurtzman and Orci, who are the executive producers and main writers for this, have this tendency of having really kind of neat and interesting concepts and then just executing them poorly. Either not explaining some things or taking things in the most conventional possible direction. This just feels like they threw a lot of stuff at the wall, and it's very interesting stuff from a certain point of view, but it's also like, okay, is this going to come to anything? That's my main concern. Because it seems like it's also designed to be as flexible as possible in terms of having episodic adventures.
No, I could see that. Although, I mean, I wasn't sure if Gary was referring to the fact that we have a Sleepy Hollow where they do not refer to Washington Irving's story at all, unlike the real Sleepy Hollow in upstate New York.
Well, yeah, that's what I meant, that, you know, that you're playing this, like, a Headless Horseman in Sleepy Hollow? I would have almost liked to see them acknowledge it and then dismiss it to some extent, or, you know, perhaps in the course of the storyline show that there was some real reason that the story was told, even if it's not accurate or something along those lines. But but to just totally dismiss it, you know, puts this place into even more of an alternate reality than it is, where it seems if you're trying to play it where it's somewhat quasi-realistic, you would have acknowledged the story.
Yeah, although, I mean, I guess it would put it in the same universe where Elementary exists without anybody knowing who Sherlock Holmes is. But...
Right, I guess so. And again, I don't think that they're focusing so much on the origins of the idea.
No.
Because, quite frankly, it doesn't make any sense to try and make a series out of the Sleepy Hollow legend. I mean, they had to do something, and this is about as different a take as you can get. I mean, I didn't really see it going here. Let me put it that way. I'm kind of glad that they did, because I think I would have lost interest very quickly, but yeah. Odd. To say the least. I mean, what else can we say about this? I do think that the cast is pretty good. I liked the fact that they are playing Crane as someone who is seeing things from the perspective of his time. Although, like you said, he is fairly, he's not playing that whole, I'm out of time, so let me talk about every single second about how weird it is. He's kind of rolling with it, but he also, when he approaches a situation, he has to adjust his thinking, because, you know, he says things that don't make any sense in our day and age. And then, of course, taking his wife in the role in the story that she fulfills, and turning her into... a witch in a coven that is working apparently to stop the apocalypse or something. It's like, okay, gorgeous redhead, and that's nice, but what? again, something that I hope to get into a lot more, because, you know, what a warlock is doing, you know, posing as a priest, and I don't know. A lot of stuff was going on that was not quite put into context yet. Let's put it that way.
And also, I mean, it was kind of a, you know, kind of doubling or tripling up on, you know, that, you know, I already mentioned Clancy Brown, but, you know, but certainly, you know, yeah, I mean, having, you know, Clancy Brown have his head chopped off, and then, you know, both John Cho and, you know, and the priest who, you know, seemed to have a major part of this back in the day, when you got put in that cave, you know, having all of them, you know, offed in this pilot, it was, you know, it was certainly sort of a upping the ante of, you know, it's in a way, I mean, I think it's almost reaching the point where it's, you know, yeah, it's become so de rigueur. It's almost, you know, it's almost going too far of like, you know, yes, anybody can die, you know, or at least, you know, yes, just because they're a famous person, you know, or somebody, you know, it doesn't mean they're going to stick around. It was certainly effective in terms of setting the tone, but yeah, I have your same reservations drawn of, you know, is this just all effect for the pilot and then we'll just sort of slide into some sort of status quo for the series, but certainly I will say I was entertained enough to, you know, yeah, I want to see what they do with this, and you know, just try and set some of the history aside, and you know, hope that it does wind up staying coherent and interesting.
Mm-hmm. So now, what do you think you would give this season or series premiere? I suppose.
I think I would give it a solid 7 for, you know, just keep it at that dead average. It was entertaining. There was, you know, but, yeah, it wasn't knocking my socks off, but it's kept me interested to keep watching.
Mm-hmm. And Gary, how about you?
I'll go with a 7. It wasn't horrible, and I see potential. And as you were mentioning before, I don't think they necessarily know where they want to go with this, so they kept a lot of things sort of open and really didn't nail down some of the concepts that hopefully they will once the series actually gets moving.
Mm. So, 7s all around?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, then. We are going to go ahead and wrap this one up with some discussion of Dexter. So, let's see, what is the synopsis here? That's not it. I've got it somewhere. Oh, wait, I'm searching for it, just like the writers are searching for some kind of relevance. Dexter, yeah. Season 8, Episode 11, Monkey in a Box. Yes, that's the title for the penultimate episode of Dexter. Dexter is torn between fleeing the country with Hannah and Harrison and taking Saxon out once and for all. And Grave gave this one a 7 out of 10. What are your thoughts on this one, Edmund, as a devoted watcher of the show?
Yes, die hard is, I think, the term.
Yes.
yeah, I mean, for, you know, you know, in recent episodes, have been talking about the Burn Notice, you know, final season, and how they managed to sort of pull themselves back from the brink after some seasons that were not so good. And Dexter, unfortunately, has just slid right back into the same old problems they've been having in recent seasons. And I mean, honestly, you know, as you were reading that description, I mean, it's, you know, it comes down to, you know, the writers have done such a bad job of sort of setting up final conflicts that, you know, yes, we're now presented with, okay, you can get on a plane with Yvonne Strahovski and your incredibly cute blonde son and fly off to Argentina and be done with all this. And it's like, yeah, why not? My reaction to all of that, and so they're still, you know, sort of trying to, you know, they've been trying to set up this, you know, this reason for him to stay behind and kill Saxon, and you know, if they'd done a better job in terms of actually setting up Charlotte Rampling as Dr. Vogel and his surrogate mother, and, you know, which would be a neat idea since that's how, you know, he supposedly got created into a serial killer in the first place, when his mother got killed, and basically they just managed to dissipate the whole thing, you know. So we wind up in this episode with, you know, Dexter sort of, you know, having this angst about, you know, whether, you know, he should just run off or, you know, stay behind to take care of Saxon, and and it just fell flat for me. And then to top it all off, I mean, they just have this ridiculous, Dexter's had plot holes, but this was just an absolutely absurd plot hole of Dexter. Yeah, I mean, he switched things up. He wasn't on the Dexter table. He was actually going to take Saxon out on Saxon's own kill chair. Decides he can't go through with it. Tells Deb to I'm going to go off. You just call it in. That you caught Saxon, and then through basically these contrived circumstances, this marshal who's been coming after Ivan Strahovski's character winds up just finding Saxon, because yes, they left him alone, because that's always a good thing, and doesn't recognize him as the guy who's already been named as a huge fugitive in Miami. And that's why he lets him go. And then, of course, Saxon, takes care of the marshal, shoots Deb, not fatally yet, maybe, who knows. Yes, that's our big cliffhanger for the season finale. And yes, I'm just taking full advantage of the spoiler warning at this point, because it's all so silly. It doesn't matter. so it was this whole thing of, the whole scenario they were setting up, I wasn't that into. And then they did this ending to it where, Dexter decided he doesn't want to kill him. And of course, then everything falls apart for reasons that make no sense. So, especially for, the penultimate episode of a series, this is supposed to set up what I cannot even imagine is going to happen in the finale. There's a hurricane coming in. They're trying to get, fly out, but will they get out before the storm? Or, now there's the whole thing of, that Saxon is, on the loose, and it basically just feels like a huge mess. And at the start of this season with both of the, both Burn Notice and Dexter, which I both followed from the beginning going into their final seasons, in a way I'm not surprised. I mean, given what I've seen from the two series and knowing sort of who's involved and the way the writing rooms are set up. But, unfortunately, Dexter has basically decided to just limp into their final episode, just mirroring all the problems they've had in the later seasons. And if anybody who hasn't watched Dexter wants to pick it up, it's like, just watch seasons 1 through 4 and don't bother with the last four. That's all I can say.
What are you going to do? All right, well, let's see. Greg gave this one a 7 out of 10, as he has given most of the episodes this season.
Yeah.
Stating that this season has been simply distressingly average. What would you say about this episode, though?
Oh, I'd drop it to a 6. Perhaps as much because it's, because it's the next to last, it's supposed to set up the finale, and it was just, those last 10 minutes in particular is just like, I do not believe you were doing this to go into your final episode. So
it's all very unfortunate, but there we are. All right. Well, let's see then. Well, yeah, this is, our planned content is running a little bit short, but we do thankfully have a little bit of stuff in the can that we can go ahead and round this episode out with, so you'll get a little bit of bonus footage, I guess you could say, for this particular episode. But next week, when we return, in some function or another, we're going to have some more Haven, but we're also going to have some Person of Interest and some Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and maybe even some comments on the season premiere of Revolution. And we don't even know how to react to that. So there you go.
No.
But here you go. Here's some bonus footage from behind the scenes for everyone to enjoy.
So the question I was going to ask is, I know that there was some concern over the scheduling of Worldcon versus DragonCon next year.
Yep.
So are they not the same weekend then?
No, they're not the same not for at the all. Next 2 years.
Yeah.
Ah. Yep. Okay then.
Yeah, no, and that's interesting. Yeah, and I'm in preparations, but it looks pretty definite that yes, my plan is to be at Worldcon next year. So, however, it's up in the air whether or not I'll be back in the U.S. or in the South in time for DragonCon or not. So,
Now, is it actually in London proper?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's in one of these new convention centers that were built in the East End, kind of around the Olympic redevelopment.
So, is that out by the Docklands?
I think it's beyond the Docklands, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically, it's a matter of, you know, I mean, it kind of annoyed me at first, because it was like, you know, well, wait a minute, I've got friends I can stay with in London, but I don't want to commute all the way. I was like, okay, fine, I'll stay in the hotel close to the convention during the convention. So. But we'll see, depending on who's going. I know Jan, Babylon Lurker, was considering it, so, you know, I may wind up sharing a room with him, so... We shall see.
Now, according to this little handy-dandy map that I have here, it's actually a shorter drive for me to get to Atlanta than it is to get to Myrtle Beach.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
Well, yeah, because you got to get off the interstate and go all the way to the coast. But
yes. And wait, as I look here. Let's see.
You know, and drive past all the billboards for Ripley's.
Oh, and look, you know, at the what aquarium. That route is taking me just past.
Yes, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Disneyland?
No. Sorry.
chauffeur for Edmund.
Let's just say that, yeah, should someone be in the U.S., he may find himself abducted.
Yes.
I'm not going to be on my own when I come over, and I'm going to have a lot of train train trips already paid for.
Yeah, well, actually, depending on which direction you're coming from, the train will take you right through Greenville as well.
Oh, then there you go.
Well, the last thing I'm not 100% sure, but basically me and a friend are planning to do a big, long America trip, like longer than the last couple I did, and not with tours or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to start somewhere on the West Coast, either way up sort of Seattle way or down in kind of San Francisco, and then catch trains and sort of wind our way down and around.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll probably, I don't know, what we're looking at doing is sort of like getting up sort of Boston, maybe up to Chicago, and then just catching a plane for that last leg to get to Atlanta.
Are you going to dress as hobos? Please dress as hobos.
I don't think we're going to dress as hobos.
Damn it.
What does an Australian hobo look like?
Terrifying. Come on, everything in Australia is terrifying after all.
I will need to stock up on some hobo stuff. I sort of realized, like, watching the, when the last season of Breaking Bad started up again and they had the flash forward, I just sort of realized, oh, that's someone I could just grow my hair out a little bit, get the beard a bit thicker, get some good glasses, and that's a really easy cosplay.
Does any of you guys watch How I Met Your Mother?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was somebody that cosplayed as Nicole Sparkles?
Robin Sparkles?
Oh, Robin Sparkles.
Yes.
Did she ask you to go to the mall by any chance?
She had a boombox and she was playing it. I've had that song in my head for about 5 days now.
That's fantastic.
Excellent.
I still have it in my head. As a matter of fact, I was tweeting, Facebooking to the girl this morning. It's still in my head. How do I make it stop?
Yeah, that's some.
There is no making it stop, Gary.
I know.
A friend of mine, a couple of years ago, I was at a friend of mine's place for a housewarming, and they had one of those I think it was the Wii like dance game, and one of the songs they had was "Let's Go to the Mall."
That's awesome.
So you had about half the people there going, "What in the name of all holy hell is this?" And the other half of the people just. Making all of the lamest Canada jokes you could possibly think of.
I was
a Canadian teen pop star.
That knowing that it's that relatively short of a drive actually increases the chances.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No. Once you get on, the one thing I will say is, I mean, it probably took you down 85, didn't it?
Nope.
It did 81. Okay, good. I was going to say, yeah, come down the mountains. Don't go through every major populated area between you.
No. We learned that lesson going to Myrtle Beach.
Okay.
We went down that way and it took us just as long to reroute over to 81 but at least we were driving the whole time, so it didn't feel nearly as horrible.
Yeah, exactly. But, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I already have done the, you know, more than half of that trip regularly going to tech, so.
Oh, sure. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. So.
It's, yeah, that wouldn't be bad. In fact, the reason I say that is that it would not be out of the realm of possibility simply to convince my family that, sure, they want to just hang out at a hotel in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
They won't see me for 3.5 days.
Yeah.
But where are you staying? Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'll catch up with you. Don't worry. Just you're taking the first shift that day.
Well, you already got the Sheridan, right?
I don't have anything.
No, Bronstom.
Oh, Bronstom. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking to me.
I'm going to go for a room at the Marriott. And basically, like, if I do that, I'll still have a room at the Sheraton to play around with. So I think that there's one or two people on the dibs list.
Yeah.
But there's a there's a chance I'll be able to help someone out with accommodation if it comes to that.
Oh yeah, no, I've never been stuck with a room at Dragon Con. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Sheridan, the Hilton said they're supposed to give us notice like in the next few days for people who have been there before. So,
I've been following all of the updates very, very closely since before this convention, because I knew that basically getting a the most, I don't know, I figured the bit of planning with the most potential for going completely tits up would be actually getting a room nowish.
Yeah.
Just something, even if it was like one of the overflow hotels. And I came this close to booking a refundable room at one of the overflow hotels. Or not an overflow hotel, but one that's about 4 blocks out. About a bit north of the northwest of the Hyatt, and then someone mentioned, and then basically because I was following a couple of the DragonCon groups, one of them put up like, yeah, we just booked a room at the Sheraton. No, we just booked a room at the Westin. And now they're saying that they're full up or whatnot, and I just thought, yeah, okay, I'm going to take a chance, and I wound up ringing around 3 of the separate hotels before getting shunted off to the, and ringing up, mind you.
Yes.
And getting shunted off eventually over to the Sheraton where the dude I talked to was just like, DragonCon 14, yeah, awesome, we've been getting a ton of you. And all sorted.
But actually, if you get stuck there, you know, there's a Motel 6 right next to the Hilton people overlook until about 3 or 4 months before.
Yep.
Hmm. It's dirt cheap, and it's right next to the Hilton.
Right next
to the Marriott, as the Hilton is.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. There are options, I'm aware.
Yeah.
So it's
not having to worry about the family aspect. It's, yeah, I have been considering that option actually.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I mean, if finances are tight, I think that's probably the best deal at DragonCon.
I mean, you got to drive in, park your car, and you ain't going to move it till you leave, anyways.
Yeah,
exactly.
What do Motel 6 rooms generally go for?
Like $89 a night.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically just a bed and a door. But
yeah,
I mean,
which is all.
It's basically what you want.
Pretty much all you need anyway. Yeah.
Ronsum right. Doesn't even need that.
Yep.
I was waiting.
He's never in the room anyway.
He just needs the door, just the lead. Anyway.
He just needs someplace to leave his luggage. That's all he really needs.
Yeah, exactly. You just need a place to be able to lock it up. That's all. So, yeah.
Has anybody seen Bronstom? No, I haven't seen him in a day and a half. Oh, okay. That was his roommates.
It's funny because
that would have had to have been last year because in 2011 I didn't have a key to the room.
Nice. I did. Wasn't even staying there.
So I basically wound up like hanging out in the lobby level till about 7 o'clock in the morning because I got it at like 5:30 and it was just, you know, I don't want to wake people up. I'll at least wait till a slightly more reasonable time. Mm. And just the very, very, very just the bizarreness of the Marriott deserted.
Mm.
And it's just, you just see like all kinds of like, you know, bits of rubbish on the floor, like, you know, bits of like, you know, wrappers from muesli bars and things that look like streamers and pop balloons, just like a couple of security guys doing the rounds and the odd person coming back and making a beeline for their for the lift. Just a very short line outside the Starbucks that hadn't opened yet.
Yeah.
it was bizarre.
Yeah, especially after all the activity, I can imagine. I mean, it's actually reminding me of being in Times Square in like the late 80s at like 2 in the morning when it was deserted compared to now.
One fun moment. John DeLancey was coming down one of the elevators in the Marriott, and I see it's him, and I'm raising my hand, waving to him, and he looks at me. And turns right around, like, so he can't see me so he's got his back to me. And then, like, a second later, he arcs around his shoulder and starts smiling at me. and then he waves to me. Yes. So I was like, oh, you stinker.
It's what you expect of Q.
Yes.
I don't know what I enjoyed more about the lift stories. The ones, the odd time that I meet a celebrity, like, I remember being on the lift with Tom O'Pennicott. With Ray, and I recognized him and just sort of said, oh, you know, hello, and, you know, I'm a big fan and stuff like that, and got to shake his hand. And it took about, you know, half a minute for Ray to and Ray being a huge Tom O'Pennicott fan, takes about half a minute to realize. It's like, who is this guy you're talking to with a, you know, a hat, is rather tall and a Canadian accent and a square jaw, a ridiculously good, oh my God! Yes.
Oh, that's okay. My wife wanted her picture with. She's looking through the photos of who she wants pictures with, and she's like, "Oh yeah, I want him too." I said, "Can you even say his name?"
Like, does it matter?
Do you know what show he's on? Do you know anything he's ever done?
Ooh, look at the pretties.
Well, done this picture.
Well, you see,
he's done well in it. I'm a fan.
The way I was able to get away with Jamie Murray was she got her picture taken with Spartacus and Craxus.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, some friends of mine got that picture. So they put it up. It's they look like fun.
Yeah, they're both wrapped around my wife. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they look like.
It could be the Wheaton pictures. Mm. Either of them.
Yes.
So. Yeah, I'm looking forward to because my friend hasn't been to a Dragon Con or any convention.
You're starting them off with Dragon Con. You'll ruin them.
You'll ruin them forever.
You'll ruin them forever. They won't be able to go to another convention.
I started with Dragon Con too, come to think of it.
It means you've got high standards.
Or opportunity and geographic proximity, but anyway.
Yeah, well, there's. Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I started flea bitten Star Trek conventions in rundown hotels in New York City.
Actually, now that I think about it, it's like, there were a couple of horror conventions that my mom went to when I was a kid that I tagged along, but that doesn't really count. I wasn't really attending. I was just there during her appearance.
Yes. So Gary, before we adjourn, there was a lewd story that you were going to...
Yes.
Oh, that was during the edits in the blooper gag reel for Warehouse 13. Am I giving anything away? No, you'll laugh. You'll like it well enough in case I blow anything. There's this person, and I don't know who it is, hanging like out of the movie Coma.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Claudia walks in, and Micah walks in.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like trying to wake her up, and she's not waking up. So then Claudia has this look of mirth on her face, reaches into her bag, pulls out a vibrator. Micah starts nodding her head. Then you see them turn the vibrator on. Then you see the woman who's hanging by the coma start, like, her eyes start opening and closing, like, faster and faster and faster. She, like, gives a little, like, twist of her head, like, and then throws her head back. And then you see Micah smiling and nodding her head, and then you see Claudia, like, almost laughing, like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Oh, boy.
What the hell? They're canceled anyway.
Yeah.
What are they going to do?
No, I don't think that's an on-air scene, so you're probably
going to. Yeah, yes, probably.
I know.
It's like, wait, really? They're going there? Really? Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I just realized. I guess Dragon Con's sort of becoming the Siffy postmortem con, since we had all the Eureka folks there. You know, what was it, 2 years ago, just after they'd filmed their last show. And now Warehouse 13 doing the same thing.
I didn't get into a continuum panel, but I did get to see who was it? The police chief.
Mm-hmm.
The one was it? Yeah, Jennifer Jennifer Spence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the woman with blonde hair whose name Edmund said that I've already forgotten again.
Luvia Peterson.
Luvia, yeah. They were waiting while the whole Eddie Jamie Murray picture was going on, so I did talk to them for a few minutes after Eddie was done singing.
Yeah.
So the police officer, I mean, the captain guy, he's hilarious. He's really a fun guy. He's really enjoying the heck out of himself. It's like, wow, I'm real badass now.
Yes, you're the one who's starting to create the horrible future we've already seen.
Yes.
See, the nice thing about that show is that even if Siffy decides to just cancel it because it's, you know, on for too long, It's not made by them.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The media will still hold true.
Yeah, so. And it's doing fine north of the borders.
It's actually doing pretty well in the U.S. now, too.
Oh, I know. No, I know.
Yeah, I told Jennifer Spence I missed Stargate Universe. She says, so do I. They paid more.
That's just wrong and yet true.
Yeah. Yes, well, there you go. That's why they're preferring to buy these shows from Canada now.
Yep.
It costs less.
Oh, you mean, what was that? What was the latest NSA reveal? They can break any current regular encryption
standard encryption
that exists.
Yep.
That they did it through subpoenas, threatening, brute force hacking, mm-hmm. as well as intimidation.
Yep.
Charming.
They called it the name of the plan was called Bull Run.
Again, not particularly surprised.
Yeah. No.
But yeah, so they said, oh yeah, no, they can break through any encryption standard that's used on the internet.
Yep.
Does anyone remember the good old days when the CIA was relatively secretive, let alone the NSA? Like, nobody even knew the NSA existed for years.
Yeah.
It's like it's old hat.
Yeah.
Which makes me think, okay, that's nice. What organization do they have that we don't know about?
Exactly.
Because there are a couple secretive ones that are still relatively well hidden, but...
Yeah. Well, what...
Well, yeah, it's like when the NSA gave NASA that telescope, the satellite telescope that's like five times better than Hubble.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, you had two as surplus that you were just giving away?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, geez. Uh-huh. So what's really up there that this thing that's five times better than Hubble is junk?
Yes, what's the old standard? Once it actually... The public becomes aware of it. It's already been in use for 15 to 20 years or something like that. There's a rule of thumb.
Yeah.
It may be less time now because of the turnover of technology, but yeah.
I'm guessing at least 5 years. Yeah. So
Yeah. Well, so. Whatever ultra secret agency it is, they're the ones who are sowing the seeds for Skynet. So
that's it. What the machine is working with them very nicely. Thank you very much.
Did you hear California just ruled it's toxic to cook in your house?
Huh? Yeah, thank you for the reaction.
What?
I figured as we're throwing out all these conspiracy crazy things.
Wait a minute.
I believe it.
Are you browsing The Onion again?
No. No, they're requiring hood ranges now for all new stoves that are put in, and there's too many indoor contaminants.
Okay. I mean, I've got a hood range, but no, they have to require that it automatically goes on when you turn on the burner.
Yes, and it moves a certain volume of air. Yes, yeah. And it's exteriorly vented and a whole bunch of other.
You know, I mean, I have one. I just never turned it on.
You know how we know that this is actually something to be worried about? All the people who created that law were in houses that did not have this kind of exhaust, and the contaminants damaged their brains.
Yes.
It's not unlike the situation that I had at work where I was trying to describe for somebody why they couldn't quite get through to one of the management about this issue that everyone else seems to understand, but they don't. And I said, it's because you haven't used the shovel that can dig far enough in the sand to find his head. The sad thing is the guy's boss laughed with me. Yes.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, my, they actually have a picture of me up from that panel. Oh,
gosh. Yes, they do.
Oh, jeez, my hair looks... The hair that I have looks bad. Oh, jeez.
That's how I knew you were there before I actually listened to it. And then thought it was quite funny when I was listening to it, because you could hear... And here we go, everybody! crap, you can actually count the number of people clapping in the background. This is not good.
Well, actually, as a side note, I fell asleep in my room, and my phone was going off, and my wife walked back in the room and said, Gary, why is your phone going off? Oh, crap, I got to be on a paddle.
It's a good thing you rushed.
Yes. Well, I thought I was just walking in and going to sit in the audience, sort of like moral support. I didn't know they had a chair for me. I was like,
Yes, you're the critical myth representative.
That's right.
Yes. No problem. I did as well. I pimped us like a son of a gun.
That's right.
But
no, I think you're correct, just because I was thinking about it when I was listening to it today, that it's like, yeah, if you just – I don't know that people would even know what it was, and 5:30 on a Saturday night, I don't know what kind of counter stuff is going on at the same time, but that's usually prime time for a lot of...
Actually, it was, a lot of people were getting dinner and stuff, getting ready for the night. So
there you go.
Saturday's the big day, but 5:30 is more that, shift.
That lull, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, there's the last usually big shows actually are around 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
So they go 4 to 5, and then everybody sort of goes and gets dinner, and then they start getting ready for the 8 and 10 o'clock shows and parties and stuff.
Well, I'm thinking more along the lines of the ones that I've been to where they don't clear the room, so everybody is already claiming space.
Yeah.
It's different in Dragon Con, right?
That's the huge difference compared to New York and Phoenix.
I was at one panel they didn't clear on Monday morning as I was getting ready to leave, and the Warehouse 13 panel was coming up. I wanted to get in early so I get a decent seat because I figured they'd be filled up, because they were the only real good panel running that time. So I get there early, and they have the Mighty Morphing Power Rangers panel going. And I say, I'm here for Warehouse 13. Should I wait outside? And they said, oh, no, you can go sit down. I said, but could I wait outside?
please.
They didn't get the joke. And so I went in and sat down with my son. I said, oh, Clark, look, it's the Power Rangers. Who?
Who, yeah. Hmm.
The Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the yellow and the...
Mm-hmm.
And that guy played the robot?
Like the Teletubbies? No.
How do you explain what the Power Rangers are in like a sentence?
They're like if the Wiggles fought aliens with kung fu.
Mm. That might work. I will.
Yeah, but then you have to explain the Wiggles.
No, he knows the Wiggles. He's met the Wiggles.
Okay, good.
Doesn't know the Wiggles.
Have you met the Wiggles, Gary?
Yes, I have.
Okay. That was one thing that my kids were never into. Although they were aware of them, they never really got into the Wiggles.
Oh no, my kids were into the Wiggles, and they were, you know, they were running one of their little, you know, tour things, and we went and saw them in person live. Although the Randy side comments they make that go over the kids' heads that all the adults seem to get and laugh at was an unexpected part of the tour. The double entendres and things like that. I'm like, wait a minute. I've watched every damn episode they've done. I never heard this stuff before. But I guess they have to have something for the adults, and they do in the live shows.
Yeah, I would imagine that they understand that the suffering needs to end sooner or later.
Yes.
So, it's my wife kind of took that one for the team, and as far as going to the live concerts of the kid shows. So, Yeah, I never had to endure that. But there we are. Let's see. I know I'm forgetting to load this. Oh, there it is. Sorry, I've been stitching the episode together while we've been talking.
No problem. No, and Brad didn't. Yeah. And Brad did not win a Parsec this year.
Yes. No.
Did Bobby give you a hard time about Parsecs again?
What do you mean?
He keeps recounting the story of how he once talked to you and asked about, you know, his show and his submission of years ago for the Parsecs, and you gave him like all the reasons why it didn't become a finalist or something like that, and he's never forgotten it.
Well, I sure have. I deal with 300 shows a year. I
told him that too. I'm like, you do realize that the chances are that it was one of hundreds of submissions.
They get whittled down to, you know, four or five. And
per category, they get whittled down to like 40 from like 300 plus. You know, I don't remember that. Jeez.
I'm sure he's tongue in cheek about the whole thing. But and then I just reminded him when he brought it up. I said, yeah, and remember, since he's a co-host, we are ineligible. Shut it.
Yes.
Fair enough.
No, actually, no. We wouldn't be, but he would be. Well, no, I guess they should. No, not really. We don't have anything for him. But yeah, no.
I mean, it's not that we were ineligible. It's just you couldn't vote on us.
No.
Yeah.
No. Not giving my level of participation in this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wouldn't look proper.
Yes.
Yeah, I that was pretty much, I considered that a given. I mean, I didn't even look into it. It was just, I figured it would be bad form, so.
But I don't think his meets any category for it.
Mm. Mm-hmm. He is kind of niche, so.
Yeah, video games, I don't.
Yeah.
Might have an argument, possibly, but I don't know. I'd have to preclude. I'd preclude myself from the discussions. I feel Brad. Every time Brad says, "Oh yeah, I'm up for the award," and I know if he won or lost or before I even see him every year, and I can't say anything.
Yeah. Yep.
You don't say.
Actually, I just pulled up the Vogue page, and this is a different angle, and that is a very nice tunic, Gary.
They are really good. I was amazed at the quality. It's even got like the zipper up by the neck there.
Yeah,
so you get your head. Except I can see why Shatner wore a girdle. That is not a forgiving shirt. There is no stretch. There is no anything. It is one tight fit. My wife said, "Now you know what it's like when I have to wear a fancy dress." So I was like, "Oh,
yeah." The classic one, it looks like it has a slightly different cut to it than the modern version. Because I have the 2009 movie version,
right?
But it's equally unforgiving, Gary.
Is it? Okay.
But it has a little bit, you know, the new ones, they have the actual symbol pretty much in a pattern over the entire thing. So it's not as just plain, I guess you could say. But yeah, they run very small.
Yeah, matter of fact, I had to go up. I'm usually an extra large in most things, and when I ordered one of the pre-sized ones for like $200 instead of the custom-made ones for $450.
Right.
And they're like, go up one size. They said, Don't be proud. If you want to wear the shirt, go up the sausage. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. You're going this far. Yeah. Yeah. Don't stop now.
Believe us. Yes.
Yeah, because I had the under tunic and the main tunic as well as separate pieces. So that, and that stuff is hot.
Oh, that is a very hot shirt too. That's, it's like some sort of polyester, but that doesn't breathe. And you're
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Even with a t-shirt, even with a t-shirt under it, you're dripping.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, that was the one I went to wear for the world record attempt, and I didn't even want to put it back on really because it stunk to high heaven just after. So I flipped it.
A little gold bond, a little Febreze, everything's fine.
Yeah.
I felt like the typical con guy because it reeks so bad. I was like, no. I've showered every day, honest, I am. I only had it on for like maybe 45 minutes, but yeah, it was ripe. But yeah, next year I'm going to get the boots and pants and finish it off, so...
Yeah, I didn't really see anything that was so different about the pants that it really demanded paying the money for the pants versus having just a good cut dress pant. But
well, remember, if you get the correct thing, the boots are higher and the pants stop at the boot.
Okay, yeah, in the original, you're right.
That, yeah. That. So
I was still thinking the more modern version, but
yeah, the next generation, you could get away with it, even a pair of like flat fronted pants and
yeah.
And I actually had my TNG uniform, but I never felt like putting it on. There was just too much of it. It didn't feel like, yeah. Too many people are wearing them. And then I have a friend who's a bit conservative, and he went into the George Takei panel, and he's talking about, he talked about, you know, gay rights and marriage for like 20 minutes. I said,
yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute. You're talking about George Takei, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I said, you follow him on like Twitter and stuff. He's like, yeah. I said, if you walked into that panel and you didn't expect to hear at least 15 to 20 minutes of that, why the hell did you walk in?
Exactly.
Yeah. Good God.
I mean, I'm not getting on any side of any argument. I'm just saying.
No,
that, you know,
but yeah.
you should expect that. It's like when you go in to see Shatner, you know he's going to mention a horse at some point. It's inevitable.
Yes, which was reminding me of one of my favorite moments of the roast, but anyway. I was just flicking around the VOG website and realizing, damn, there are a lot of long-running shows on VOG.
Oh, yeah. That was one of the things they brought up, was just that because they were looking for established shows, especially when they first started, a lot of them were long-running ones.
You know, everybody's into three figures or well into three figures.
Well, I think with the exception of Brad, I think we're the second longest. And at the rate we're going, we should surpass them easily within the next few months.
Yeah, well, yeah.
If you, let's see, well, you've got...
I mean, yeah.
Bobby's
yeah.
show is up at like almost 400.
Yeah.
Orange Lounge Radio is over 500.
500, yeah.
But yeah, we're not doing too bad.
Yeah.
That's for sure. We've kind of got the we're up there with everybody else, and we're gonna lap Brad's show pretty quick. So.
Yeah.
And then the one they just added is actually up to episode just over.
Yeah, it's already
like
on
right around our numbers,
350. So. Yeah.
So. It's good though. I mean, I think it's just daunting for people who want to jump in.
No, it's just, I mean, with all most of the shows on there, it's like, you know, no, it's not like it's a running continuum where you have to start at zero. It's like,
yeah.
You know, it's like, no.
No, I mean, if you're like a relatively new one and you're like, oh, I'm trying to get in on this and there's all these really well-established shows.
Yeah.
How am I going to compare to that?
Well, that's true. Okay.
But it's like, you know, Brad talking about how long he has to, and how many times he has to listen to everything, and because of how he edits everything together, and I'm sitting there listening to him talk about that and going, what's the problem?
Yeah.
Editing? What editing?
What editing?
I subscribe to the Mike, you know, Mike Meningay, edit on the fly and don't look back.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. It's not like they're tuning in for their production quality.
Yeah.
No, There was a stretch of time when I was going in and really trying to cut out any of the awkward pauses or excessive ums and everything else. And I typically listen to every show after it's gone on the podcast feed, because every once in a while the uploads will glitch.
Right.
And
sure.
I have to fix it. So that's the only way I'm going to find it, unless somebody tells me 3 days later.
Yeah.
So I would listen to them, and then I'd listen to one that I didn't have time to edit. And it's like, I can't really tell the difference. I only knew there was a difference because I was editing it.
Yeah.
And it was so obvious to me as I was editing. But if I'm just listening to it, I don't even hear it, and I know what to listen for.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, we probably really don't need to do this after 350-some episodes. I think we're good.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I just think back to Three-Edged Sword, I mean, I know that there were times when I, you know, was sort of, you know, putting my scenes together and sort of, you know, thinking like, oh, there's a big gap here, and then it's like, no, you need pauses. Like,
yeah.
You know, everything doesn't have to, like, run into each other.
Yes, the dramatic pause.
Yes. Yeah, don't have to go Pinterest with it, but...
Yeah.
A little bit of flat line on that, you know, on that editing graph isn't a bad thing.
Yeah. Plus, yeah, we rarely have any extended time periods where nobody says anything unless there's some kind of technical thing going on. And it's actually kind of funny when that happens. Yes. So. Hello. I could do without the echoes that we occasionally get, but
yeah, well,
there may be another solution that I'm looking into that we may jump over to if it works out the way that I want it to, because as a side benefit of the package that I got in order to remote connect to my server, is a kind of, you know, live meeting type, you know, stripped down version of live meeting type of online type of, you know, convo type of thing, like conference.
Gee, so, you mean something like GoToMeeting, like they used to talk about on the Babylon podcast?
Yes, but not, you know, expensive. So. Considering it's, you know, part of the thing. So I'm curious as to perhaps trying that out, because there would be a lot less traffic on that. And so I'm wondering if the audio fidelity would be a bit better and the stability would be better. But, you know, we can give it a shot sometime.
Yeah.
Probably not next time we record, because I doubt I'll have time to really mess with anything. But, yeah, that's probably the last thing we should talk about. What night do we want to do the other two shows? We probably could have been recording this as the second one, but beyond that.
Sunday or Monday, because
I just got to know so I can schedule.
Yeah, either is still fine with me, so it's...
Sunday's fine, and Monday's fine anytime after, like, 9 o'clock.
Yep, that would be the time I'd be looking for, 9 to 11 or so.
Okay.
Yeah, I have scouts from, like, 7 to 8:30.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I still don't have my roster for next week yet.
Okay.
All right, well, then we'll wait until we hear from you, and then we'll go from there. But, yeah, I mean, the schedule is kind of up, so we know what we're going to be looking to do. It's just, if I know on Sunday that we're going to do something, then I know I need to leave a little bit earlier to get back.
Yeah.
But, which is not a big deal. It's just, you know, I'll need to do some things for work on Monday morning that I wouldn't be able to do if we were recording at 9 on Sunday night, so. Since I'll be gone. As of pretty much now, so.
where are you off to now?
I'm off to the unfortunately named ParaFest 2013.
Oh, which, yes, right.
Yes, is really just the opportunity to hang out with Mark Shepard and people from True Blood and Walking Dead.
And avoid all the paranormal investigators.
Yeah, or mock it incessantly, pretty much. Yeah. A friend of mine was...
There is the, was it, 6 degrees of separation using Mark Shepard?
Yeah.
I was going to say, that knocks it down to about 2, so...
Yes, exactly. As I commented to Edmund, that there's every once in a while I get this odd realization of just how many people are only 1 or 2 degrees separated from us, and it's like, wow, okay. we know some interesting people. Mm-hmm. But... at any rate, no, the friend of mine was supposed to get married this weekend, So I set everything up to be there for the entire weekend, and then the plans changed because of travel issues and so on. And we're all going to be there, but the stuff isn't going to happen. So it's like, well, I paid for it. I'm going. Yeah. And I guess the side benefit is that because he was going to get married during the VIP dinner, which is part of the problem was that the VIP dinner disappeared. Everyone who wanted to ensure that they were going to be there got a VIP pass. It was kind of the equivalent of paying, you know, for a expensive destination wedding, I guess you could say, but relatively cheap. It's only a couple hundred bucks. Yeah. But the benefit is that we all kind of get to hang out in the suites all day if we so desire and hang out with all the people. So it's like, okay. Basically, I get to hang out all weekend and drink with celebrities. This is a problem, Hal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's
well, and depending on how friendly you get, you might get a bumper or two. Who knows?
Exactly. Since, you know, I imagine that they're going to just want to, you know, hide quite often. So, okay. So the VIP suites are up by the bar. Yeah, this will work out pretty well. So, yeah, I'm leaving from work tomorrow around midday to get over there and just make sure that I'm staying at like a Best Western, so I don't have to pay exorbitant fees because it's at a casino convention center or something like that.
Yeah.
The main rooms were, well, you can just imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. So I won't be actually home until sometime Sunday afternoon. So that's my point, is that I wouldn't really have a chance to do, you know, anything to prep for work on Monday, and if we were recording, unless I got home a little earlier, which again, yeah. I doubt there's nothing really on Sunday that I'm all that keen on sticking around for. So it'll probably play itself out by then.
Yeah.
They'll probably get angry if I do decide to go and, like, totally mess with the people on the ghost hunting.
Yes.
But, what, VIP pass, I can do whatever I want.
Do you ever calibrate your meters?
Yeah, exactly. Hi, I'm the tech check. Where's your NIST sticker? Where is it? You don't have one. I'm literally beating you with your EMF meter.
Yeah.
You have one, good. You passed the first test.
Yeah.
Still not worth anything. You don't know the frequency. Shut up.
Yes. Here, look at the readings I got in the room. Oh my God, there's a ghost here. There must be.
Oh. Strangely, it hangs out by these electrical plugs.
And runs up the wall over to the light. Oh.
A steady 60 hertz. How could this possibly be?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Your meter is only registering that. Dumbass.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did the science get in the way of your fantasy? Oh. At any rate, yeah. Okay, so Ron's thumb, just let us know. Send an email. I'm sure that at some point or another I'll actually have, you know, signal or Wi-Fi to get it. But I'm not taking my computer because I'm fairly sure the Best Western isn't going to have reasonable internet.
Yeah.
Nor do I feel like I'm going to be around very often, so pretty sure that it's open until 2 a.m. in the morning. So, at any rate, it's not Dragon Con, but it'll do.
Yeah.
Baby steps.
Keep telling yourself that.
All I needed I'm just waiting for the opportunity to mention birthday announcements at karaoke, and yeah. And see if I get the double take. That's it. Then, everyone knows that story. Everyone knows Australians. What? That was unexpected. All right. So, yep. Just send us an email.
Will do.
Yep.
All right.
All right.
All right. Guys. Have a good weekend.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You try to do the same.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter @Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there is also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for the show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...